And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this episode of the Hagmann Report. Today it is Monday, October 23rd, 2017. A lot going on in the headlines, a lot taking place all across not just the United States, but all across the globe. Welcome to this edition of the Hagmann Report. We broadcast live each and every weeknight. That's from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network, YouTube Live, and also Blog Talk Radio, where you can find our archives as well. And we're, in addition to being simulcast 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on those venues, we're also live Monday through Friday with our two shows. That's my show, the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour, Doug Hagmann Radio Show. That's from 9 to 10 p.m. or 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Global Star and BTR only, not on YouTube. That's Global Star and BTR. It's Blog Talk Radio. And then, of course, Joe and John have their show from 2 to 3 Eastern Time on the same venues. I want to welcome everyone to the program tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. The first guest coming up, Peter Barry Chowka, one of the foremost intellectual writers, I believe, in the country. And he's got some history. And I'm fascinated by history. As you know, anyone who listens to my morning show knows how fascinated I am with events in history, and really past this prologue. Really what we're seeing today was couched in and set in motion quite a number of years ago. And in the modern era, of course, more recently, you go back into the 60s and 50s and 40s, and you'll see what's taking place today. You'll see the consequence of what happened back then. And to talk about the lexicon of political profanity at its finest, that is the current PC culture, the culture of political correctness, that toxic culture. And what happened to set the stage for today is one of my favorite people. That's Peter Barry Chowka. Peter, welcome to the Hagmann Report.
Thank you, Doug. It's great to be with you again.
No, it's great to have you. Great to see you, my friend. Boy, I'll tell you, 50 years, I don't know how many people realize this. Frankly, I did not realize that Saturday was the 50th anniversary of the 1967 Pentagon March, the touchstone, as you wrote on the Hagmann Report, a touchstone in the transformation of America. Peter, indeed, I mean, this... what we saw 50 years ago, and you were there. So let's talk about that, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. I was there, and in fact, it was such a major event in my life as a young reporter that every October 21st since then, without fail, I have thought back to that day. That date has stayed in my mind ever since Saturday, October 21st, 1967, and here this year, the 50th anniversary was also on a Saturday. And as I would have expected, the mainstream media emerged with many articles looking back at that event 50 years ago. The New York Times did a long oral history. The Washington Post did a piece. U.S. News, which I'm surprised to see is still publishing, did a rambling piece. And as expected, this was all revisionist history that tries to make a great thing out of the March on the Pentagon, the largest to date at that point, the largest anti-war pro-peace demonstration in the history of the United States. It was about 100,000 people who assembled on the Mall in Washington, D.C. on October 21st, 67, initially at the Lincoln Memorial for speeches, at the same spot that the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom 4 years earlier had occasioned the memorable speech by Martin Luther King. So on that same spot, the speakers emerged, and many of them were cultural figures. Peter, Paul, and Mary, entertainers, Phil Oakes, folk singer, Dick Gregory, the comedian. And this is how even then, the organizers of this event, who, by the way, as you might imagine, had communist leanings and probably communist funding. There was something called the Mobilization Committee that had arisen the year before with individuals like David Dellinger, who was a communist and would later be one of the defendants in the Chicago 7 or 8 trials, Rennie Davis, another far leftist, and I knew Rennie Davis very, very well. I interviewed him probably dozens of times, live on the radio and at various demonstrations, and I knew the guy very, very well. So the origins of this thing are not pure peacenik anti-war. It's part of the, dare I say, international communist conspiracy that was behind this. And all you have to do is look at what happened that day. After the speeches, the front people, who included people like the writer Norman Mailer and Dr. Benjamin Spock, the best-selling baby doctor who had become a far leftist by then, they led the march of somewhere around 20 to 40,000 people to the Pentagon. And there was a very radical contingent that was actually behind that march that had planned violent action to try to take over the Pentagon, to penetrate the Pentagon, and they were prepared for battle, much like we see today with the Antifa and the other groups that emerge around a supposedly social justice cause, and the next thing you know, the city's burning down, right? So here it was, 50 years ago, the large contingent got to the Pentagon, and immediately a significant number of them started attacking the military police and the troops who were encircling the Pentagon. I mean, this was serious business. The powers that be then had advance warning that there was going to be trouble, and the Pentagon itself, I think the largest office building in the world at that point, might be at risk for penetration. So actual battles went on between the demonstrators, the more radical demonstrators, and the MPs and the troops. And this went on all night, well until the next morning. But it's interesting now when you look at the coverage, especially that appeared within the last week, I don't think I saw one article about this march on the Pentagon that didn't have one or more photographs of like flower children demonstrators putting little flowers in the gun barrels of the troops that were massed there. And of course, this is 1967, right after the so-called Summer of Love, which was one of the greatest propaganda exercises in the history of the world, to paint over this radical cultural revolution with, go to San Francisco and wear some flowers in your hair. That was the big top 40 hit of the summer of 67, a few months earlier. But I'd like to take this back briefly to what I see as the origin of this cultural revolution. And by the way, the timing here is interesting. Mao Zedong and Red China had their own cultural revolution starting in 1966. Isn't that interesting? Is that interesting. A coincidence or what? Yes. And in fact, in 1966, I had the ability to monitor the two English language broadcasts a day of Radio Peking, as it was then called. My late father was a ham radio operator, and he built a 60-foot tower in our backyard with this enormous antenna on top of it that could be rotated and aimed where you wanted to pick up a radio signal, and his very sophisticated receiver could receive shortwave broadcasts. So I was there listening to Radio Peking in English. At the time, there was virtually no contact between the United States and Red China, and this was one of the only things we had to go by of what's going on in that country. And this was at the height of the Cultural Revolution and the Red Guards and Chairman Mao's thought, the Little Red Book. And when I look back on this now, I still have some recordings of those broadcasts, and you can also find some of them online if you Google it. But I get chills thinking of it even now, thinking back to listening to those broadcasts and how really what made the change, what brought the transformation to this country, starting not in the 60s, but in the 1940s. It was 1946 when, in particular, three individuals at Columbia University in New York, William Burroughs, a rich dropout, Allen Ginsberg, the famous poet and radical, and Jack Kerouac, who was a famous novelist, wrote On the Road. They came together at Columbia University and formed what was called the Beat Literary Movement. And this was the precursor of the Cultural Revolution that would follow a decade or two later. These guys started publishing. I mean, they were basically down and out radical dirtbags, in my opinion. But they were very smart. They were intellectuals. And Ginsberg, especially, was a master of public relations. Kerouac, Jack Kerouac, was probably the best of the bunch. In fact, he came out of a strong Christian orientation and later returned to that and actually became a political conservative in the 1960s before he died in 1968 early on. But the others, their favorite book was Oswald Spengler's Decline of the West, which had been published in the 1920s. They were working towards the decline of the West and the United States through cultural methods. And we don't have time now to go into this, but sometime it would be nice if we did, because this is really interesting to get into the origins, and it has a tremendous impact on what we're seeing right now. But anyway, to advance the story quickly, by the 1950s, Ginsberg, Burroughs, and Kerouac were hitting the mainstream. They were selling books and poetry and getting notoriety in the media, and this gave rise to the Bohemian Beatnik movement. Beatnik was the derisive satiric term that was given to it in 1959. But the Bohemians in the 50s, and then the Cultural Revolution of the 60s with the hippies. And this grew out of the SDS creation in 1962 and the Port Huron Statement, 60-some-odd page manifesto that they came up with, the SDS, in their formative year there, 1962. And it was basically the roots of, like, the Weather Underground, the communist putsch or transformation that we would see through the rest of the 60s. But they understood very, very well that you had to work through the culture to grab the hearts and minds of the youth. And that's exactly what they did through the transformation of rock music during the 1960s. And, of course, through the introduction of serious drugs, not only marijuana, but most significantly the psychedelic drugs, LSD and mescaline. And, of course, the CIA had a role in helping to test and disseminate those psychedelic drugs at a very early stage. That's been well documented. But it's really mind-boggling when you think of it, how all these things were coming together, the cultural meme, revolution, communism, part of the international communist conspiracy. Something with the same term, cultural revolution, was going on in Red China at that point. Of course, there was at the hands of an authoritarian regime which enforced that cultural revolution at the barrel of a gun, and tens of millions of Chinese died as a result. Here it was by a more subtle means of capturing the hearts and minds of the youth. And, of course, that youth, the baby boomers, eventually came into power, and many of them are still in power today. In fact, the New York Times, in their oral history of the March on the Pentagon that was published 2 days ago on Saturday, it's well worth a look, I guess, if you read it between the lines. But they went back and interviewed in snippets people who had attended that march, most of them as participants. A few, they tracked down a few of the troops who were there to defend. But when they looked at what are they doing now, what are these people doing now, virtually without exception, all of the demonstrators are still social justice warriors, many of them professors at universities, leading journalists. I mean, they are in there now with significant roles, and they gave very short shrift in this article, of course, to the other side, those who were defending the Pentagon at that point. But it's mind-boggling to look back. Now, just to personalize it for a moment, to say where I was coming from then, I was a freshman at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., which was just a couple of miles away from the Pentagon. You could actually see the Pentagon from the Hilltop campus where Georgetown is located. And I made a beeline for Georgetown's radio station as soon as I got to the campus 5 weeks earlier as a freshman, because I was interested in journalism and in music, and the Georgetown radio station was the place to be. It was a regular FM station that could be heard with its signal about 50 miles in all directions. So it was a regular FM radio station in the nation's capital. And I was assigned that day to cover that demonstration, because that night I was anchoring the three newscasts on WGTB-FM, the 10 and 11 p.m. and 12 midnight newscasts. So I went to this march. It was the first big march I'd ever attended or covered. I did encounter one in New York City. It was actually the precursor to this Pentagon march. The same cast of characters had one in Manhattan in April that year, 1967. And I was in New York that day on personal business, and I saw the march, but I didn't hang out there. I didn't attend it. I just was crossing the street and saw these people marching and shouting and waving their banners and thought, that's interesting. And six short months later, I had the benefit of being right at ground zero there in the front row covering this thing. So I marched along with them to the Pentagon. I left before most of the real radical violent action started, although I did get my first whiff of tear gas there, which was being used to protect the Pentagon, because I had to rush back to Georgetown to prepare these newscasts. But, it was a long time ago, 50 years ago, at the time, not that it's relevant, I guess, like most of my contemporaries, I was against the Vietnam War because I didn't want to be drafted. Although, in 1964, 3 years earlier, I had been a strong partisan of Barry Goldwater, and actually remained so even throughout my college years. I just thought that, I knew instinctively that LBJ was conducting that war politically, and we were not going to win it. It was a mess. So why sacrifice yourself for a war that, is not going to be won because of the people like LBJ who were running the show, and even Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, supposedly admitted, not publicly, but to his colleagues in 1967, that same year, that the war was lost. So these were the people who were running the show, and I think another 30,000 Americans would die before we finally got out of there in 1975. And then later on, I had the ability to cover the politics of the anti-war movement for the next 4 years, culminating in my joining the McGovern campaign, the presidential campaign of Senator George McGovern in 1972 as a volunteer. And my colleague and I, the late Scott Spiegel, produced the radio commercials for the McGovern campaign. It was the first year, 1972, that 18-year-olds could vote. So we produced radio commercials which ran on college stations and FM rock stations, and we got to travel with the McGovern campaign during the last month of that campaign through his ignominious loss to Richard Nixon on, I believe it was November 8th of 1972. But the same suspects who created this march on the Pentagon in October 1967, they were called the mobilization. Then they renamed themselves the New Mobilization, and this was the New Left to distinguish itself from the Old Left. The Old Left, the hardcore communists who got in trouble with the House and American Activities Committee and Senator Eugene McCarthy, those Old Leftists were the ones who took root in Hollywood, New York, and Washington starting in the 1930s through the 1950s. They were hardcore communists, and this was the new generation, the new left, the young punks who thought they were going to learn from the mistakes of the old doctrinaire leftists, and they were going to do it right. So that's who was running this radical show of these demonstrations. And boy, were they successful, because they're the group that grew out of this mobilization that put on the march on the Pentagon gave itself the name the New Mobilization, and they had an office there in Washington, D.C., and I was covering what they were doing. They were planning one demonstration after another. The next one that they planned was around the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968, and we know what happened there. And the next two after that were the 1969 moratoriums on October 15th, 1969, and November 15th, 1969. And the demonstration on November 15th, 1969, which, by the way, I co-anchored the coverage of, there was something called the Ad Hoc Moratorium Radio Network, which came about to feed live coverage of the November 15th moratorium, 1969, around to college and non-commercial and any radio station in the country that wanted it. And I was co-anchoring it with a colleague of mine from American University's radio station. But that's how involved I was in covering this stuff at the time. But that November 15th, 1969 rally probably remains the largest single demonstration in the history of Washington, D.C. Estimates were imperfect, but certainly there were at least 500,000 people on the Mall and gathered around the Washington Monument for the speeches that day. And it was another hardcore event that was punctuated with a lot of entertainment. Some of the leading rock entertainers of the period appeared at that. Unfortunately, a film was never made of it, as was made at Woodstock a few months earlier. But, you know, it would really be interesting to see what came, you know, if you could go back and really relive it on video as it was. But, you know, I just wanted to say this, too, about the revisionist history. This event, the Pentagon March, which I named one of the touchstones in the history of our country's transformation, is grist for the propaganda mill, because we've seen how in recent weeks, really in recent months or years, every time there's a documentary on the Vietnam War or a new book comes out or a series of articles, they go, and most recently Ken Burns's 10-part series on the Vietnam War, which is run recently and is still running someplace in the country on public broadcasting. And of course, Burns made in his revisionist history, and he's a leftist, of course, he made a lot out of the anti-war movement and gave very short shrift not only to the actual conduct of the Vietnam War, but to who we were fighting and why we were fighting. I mean, the crimes of the National Liberation Front, the Viet Cong, and the North Vietnamese authoritarian communists. I think in his series there, I don't believe he mentioned that upwards of 2 million Vietnamese were slaughtered after the North Vietnamese communists took over the country in April of 1975, when the United States finally left. Those famous scenes of the helicopters taking off from the embassy and depositing people on the aircraft carriers offshore. So, and you know, Burns showed video of this march on the Pentagon and all these other marches as if these peaceful demonstrations, and all of them, by the way, were marked by levels of violence. I got seriously tear gassed at the two moratoriums that I mentioned in 1969. So there was violence at all of these. But you know, looking back in the fog of the revisionist communist-inspired history that has captured the mainstream media and the culture now, they gloss it over like, oh, wasn't this groovy? You know, the peaceful hippies and students and the new left, you know, marching for peace. I mean, BS. This is lies. These are lies. It's the big lie. And if only could people could go back in time and see and experience what it was really like. And, of course, it was very influential to me, a turning point. I was there hopefully with a sense of objectivity, looking at what was going on. I mean, I was, you know, 18 at the time. What did I know about these things, you know? But I was open to seeing it, to processing it, and the 50 years since then, I hope, learning what the hell it was all about. And it wasn't about what this goddamn media is telling us it was about now. I mean, this is unbelievable. And of course, flash forward to 2008, and the election of Barack Hussein Obama, which was made possible by this kind of lying propaganda that propelled him into power. And I just want to mention this, too, before we run out of time, that I'm speaking from a undisclosed location, visiting a major city on the West Coast, which I have tremendous regard for and a long history with. But in my less than 1 week here already, it's my first visit here in 6 years, and I have to say that it's a view for me of where the rubber meets the road. And everywhere I look, everything I do, whether it's a car rental agency, a hotel, Walmart, a supermarket, I can see how this country has been transformed by Barack Hussein Obama and his ilk. I mean, this country is so polarized now that you can see it and feel it even when you're going through your daily activities in a place that you once lived in when America was great several decades ago. So we are so advanced down the path of towards the point of no return that I say, God help us.
50 years beyond the 1967 Pentagon March, actually 49 years, many Americans were ready to elect a socialist for president or a communist for president. That's how far we've gone, and that's how devastatingly transformed, as you spoke, this country has been. And it's not a death of morality or death of culture. I would argue it's our culture and morality and character has been murdered, and by the very people that you spoke of. First-hand account, Peter Barry-Chalka, we've forgone the network break just to give you as much time as possible. I want to thank you so much. I would encourage everyone to read Peter Barry-Chalka's piece on HagmanReport.com, and also use social media. Send it out via social media. Spread this, because past is indeed prologue. My friend, thank you so much for your contribution, and thank you for your first-hand account, and thank you for everything you did.
Could I take 30 seconds just to update one other story briefly?
Sure.
All hell is breaking loose right now on a white-hot story involving Fox News and the latest developments. This arose from a big story the New York Times did 2 days ago, taking on again Bill O'Reilly, Fox News, and many other people. And it was a fuel was poured on the fire today by Megyn Kelly. She took 1.5 hour of her failing NBC morning show to enhance the story. And the New York Times today, I've lost track of how many stories they published in the last 6 hours on this. So maybe sometime we'll have a chance to update that, but it's just, you know, pay attention to that story. It's breaking right now, and on the very week before next Monday, Fox News is going to finish its transformation to its primetime schedule of Hannity, Tucker Carlson, and Laura Ingraham. So we have to wonder, why is this all coming out? This latest attempt at a kill shot on Fox News is just incredible timing and an incredible story.
My friend, you had predicted, or I shouldn't say predicted, but you had mapped this out when you were on our show before, and not unexpected, shall I say, what we're seeing now. And indeed, we'll have bring it back, and we'll get into this, because this does, I'm afraid this will have obviously a negative adverse impact on the last bastion of conservative news, if you want to even call it that, or at least some of the personalities on the air at Fox News. So very interested. In fact, we'll bring you back and we'll spend some time discussing that. Great. But you're right on point. You're right on point with this. You're right on point with the media wars and the assault on our media, the conservative media. It's just fantastic. Peter, thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you, Joe. Be well, and God bless you.
All right. Really appreciate your gift of time. Folks, that was Peter Barry-Chalka. Follow him. In fact, follow his social networking. Follow him on Twitter. It's P-Chalka. Okay, on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter. You've got to do that, because in fact, there it is right there on YouTube. So glad that he took the time. His gift of time is incredible. So thank you to Mr. Peter Barry-Chalka. Joe, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, that was a great piece and a great article that Peter Chalka had penned for the Hagmann Report today. And again, if you have not seen it, It is at the top. The 1967 Pentagon March, a touchstone in the transformation of America. Definitely a fantastic article. And we have other articles up there. Some interesting ones just to take a look at. Photo of Lady Gaga and five former presidents goes viral. I thought that was pretty interesting. We also have an article up here that I want to get into real quick. Well, we are going to bring on Augusto Perez in just a few moments. Mueller's Russia probe has swept up the Podesta Group. Although it might be a true headline, I think it's a misleading one. Don't expect any kind of criminal or other findings to be released to the public based on Mueller's Russia probe into the Podesta Group, as he is embedded in the Podestas, in the DNC, in deep state. Do not expect him to eat his own. With that, it's been a while since we've had him on. His website is theappearance.com, The Appearance Ministries. Evangelist, Mr. Augusto Perez. Augusto, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Joe. So good to be with you and Doug on the Hagman Report.
Well, Augusto, it's great to have you. And my dad just stepped away. John is going to be coming in as co-host. He's going to be co-hosting the rest of the show with me. And my dad sends his love. He wanted me to tell you hello. And that was after we talked on Friday. But I know we have a lot of things to get into, Augusto. We were going to talk about a number of things. The prophetic timeline, where are we at? What are we seeing in the world today? The state and decline of the church and Christianity in America. The continued established institutional power structures in America losing their power, from Hollywood to the FBI, and just the world of politics in general, and so much going on in the natural and in the spiritual. Where would you like to start today?
Well, last time I was with you, Joe, we talked about Donald Trump, President Trump, and what was God's plan and agenda for him. I shared a lot of things that the Father had given me, and I would like to touch on that, and then we'll transition to all these other areas, because that is really what is triggering all of these things that we are seeing, Joe. We are seeing the fall of the Babylon system, and I cannot overstress that. And this is... See, what we're seeing is not really the fall of America. See, for many years, a lot of people have been talking that America is Babylon. And America does have a lot of the Babylon, because it has the Babylon system. But it's not just America. America will be heavily impacted, but it's more than America. We're talking about the Western nations. We're talking about the whole world. But America is deeply immersed in the Babylonian system. Remember that in the book of Revelation, it talks about Mystery Babylon, okay? And Mystery Babylon is not a country. Let me repeat that. It is not a country. It's a system. And it is a religion as well. If you notice, every time in the scriptures when the Bible talks about a woman, whether it is a chaste woman, the bride of the Lamb, or whether it is the harlot, the prostitute, it is always referring to a body of a religious people or believers. Those that are in his will, those that are his, those that are washed in the blood, that walk a life consecrated to him, they're referred to as the bride. Those others that are worldly, are just, you know, in it for what they can get out of it, they are in sin and they pretend to be Christians but are not, those are what is called the harlot. Now, I have always believed, and I don't mean this as an offense, because I have a lot of wonderful friends who are Catholics, and many beautiful Catholic people, but the system known as the Roman Catholic papal system is what the scriptures refer to as Mystery Babylon. That is really the seed of it. That is where everything stems out of. And if you notice in the scripture, it refers to it as the mother of harlots. So there's a lot of other little harlots that are under that harlot. But the, going back to the system, the Mystery Babylon system, Joe, we are sealing. We are, what we are seeing right now is the fall of the system. We are seeing it in the government. We are seeing it in the mainstream media. How all of those big mainstream media that used to be, I mean, way up in the ratings, they no longer hold the same ratings. I mean, you name it, CNN, NBC, CBS, whatever, MSNBC, all these networks, even Fox, they're losing a lot of people. And the reason is because the system is falling. We are seeing it in football. Football has for many, 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 many decades and years been considered a sacred cow in America. Okay? One of the things that Americans worship. I mean, Monday night football is like a, it's almost like a religious thing, if you know what I'm saying. And so we are seeing this thing now falling. The ratings are falling. We see the stadiums now are half empty. And all of these things, we are seeing what could be described as the beginning of the fall of Mystery Babylon. And, yeah, it will affect America, no doubt about it, in more ways than probably any one of us can count. But, you know, I go back to now to President Trump. If you recall what I shared last time I was in your program, I said this man, God told me, he showed me and confirmed it to me that he was Cyrus. He was God Cyrus. Now, let me share something, because there's a lot of confusion out there, Joe, as you know as well as I do, amongst Christians. There's a lot of Christians, yeah, including many watchmen, watchwomen, prophetic voices out there that they just don't believe that Donald Trump is good. He's good at all. He's no good. He's rotten. He is part of the deep state, blah blah blah. and they have not let up. And so I need to clarify some of these things, because the only way that we are going to win this thing, okay, and maybe if not win, at least to hold the dark side at bay, the only way that we're going to achieve this is by having understanding and wisdom in the times that we are in and what is really going on. And so from the beginning, I share that that President Trump was God Cyrus. He confirmed that to me. If you remember last time, I had an experience where I went to Ohio last year, and the Lord confirmed this to me and my wife through a little baby boy that I told her. I had asked the Lord, I said, Lord, confirm this to me. I don't want to be misled. I don't want to say something that is not from you. So please confirm it. And that last meeting, this woman came with a little baby in her arms, and she said, please pray for my son. He was the cutest little boy, about maybe 6 to 8 months, the biggest eyes, and he just opened those big eyes and looked at me. And I asked her, I said, you know, I put my hand on his head, and I asked her, I said, what is his name? And she said, his name is Cyrus. Now, Joe, what are the chances of something like this happening right after I had asked the Lord to confirm this to me? So, you know, I don't care who comes and says, you're wrong, Brother Perez. Well, I don't care, because when I know that I know that I know that I'm right, there's a saying that says, a man with an argument is no match for a man with an experience. And I am that man with experience. And so I know this is Cyrus. This man is Cyrus. But what a lot of people do not understand, and I want to shed some light on this before we go on to other things, Joe, is what is the purpose that the Lord brought Cyrus, as you know, into the White House? Did he bring him there to make America great again? I don't think so. that is the slogan. I know that is what he said in the campaign, and he's trying to do that. But God's purpose, the purpose of the Most High in bringing this man into the White House, was not to make America great again. It was to bring down the system of Babylon, which America, it is deeply immersed in this country. It is in, well, look what's going on in Hollywood. Hollywood is coming down. It's done. It's toast. It's over. Everybody is saying it. The corruption in Hollywood is oozing, and it is being manifested now for everyone to see. The corruption in the NFL is being exposed. The corruption in government is being exposed. The corruption in the media is being exposed. Now, please tell me if this is not exposing, lifting the skirts of Babylon and exposing her nakedness and her corruption, I don't know what is. And so this is what is happening. And people need to understand. I'm talking to Christians, okay? I'm not talking to the heathen. I'm talking to Christians. You need to understand what is happening so that you know how to pray and you know what to do and what to think. Because there are many people, unfortunately, that are double-minded as well. One day they say, yes, yeah, Cyrus, President Trump is Cyrus. And the next day they say, no, you know, they believe a dream or a vision or something that someone else came up with. And then they buy into that, and then they start thinking that maybe this guy is not who I thought he was. Maybe this is, you know, one of them. And so as long as we continue to allow this double-mindedness to, you know, to be a part of us, we will never be able to have a unified prayer and success. Because the scripture says, the double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. So if there is one thing that I would say, Joe, that we need desperately at this time is we need clarity. We need to be, you know, a definition. We need to be clearly defined what is going on. If this man is, God put him there, okay? And again, people can say, well, he's not saved, he's this, he's that, you know, he's corrupt, blah, 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 yada, yada. Well, you know, I would say to these people, okay, let's take Pharaoh in Egypt when Joseph was there. Was that Pharaoh, a believer in the Almighty? No.
No.
Was that Pharaoh a good man, you know, that was, no, that Pharaoh, all that happened, all that God needed to happen, Joe, and all you guys listening out there, was for that Pharaoh to be gracious towards Joseph and towards God's people. For God's people and Joseph to find favor in the eyes of that Pharaoh. The same thing could be said of Cyrus. Now, if you look at the scriptures, Cyrus, he was not a believer in the God of Israel. This man was basically a heathen Medo-Persian king. And yet the Lord called him my shepherd in Isaiah 44:28. He called him, he is my shepherd and shall perform all my pleasure. Even saying of Jerusalem, she shall be built, and of the temple, the foundation shall be laid. So, in chapter 45, verse 1, he calls him, he's anointed, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open the doors before him, and the gates shall not be shut. So, he not only calls him his shepherd. Now, Joe would, I mean, what Christian would call today, okay, if we were to ask any Christian, any Bible-believing Christian, if they would call Cyrus back then God's shepherd, what would the majority of Christians say?
probably that you're crazy.
You're crazy. I mean, how can this heathen man be a shepherd? Yet God called him my shepherd. Now, let me take it a step further. In chapter 45, the Lord Jehovah said to, you know, he said to his anointed Cyrus, okay? To his anointed. Now, if I were to say, or if someone were to say today that Cyrus back then was God's anointed, what would the majority of Christians today say? The same thing, right? We're crazy. You're lost. You have no discernment. Well, you see, this is what is going on right now. This is what we're hearing from so many voices out there that are confused. They don't know what's going on. They don't understand. And so we need clarity. Okay?
Amen. Amen. Brother Augusto Perez, John Robertson sitting in for Doug Hagman. God bless you, sir. You know, we've had the opportunity to speak a number of times one-on-one, but never on air, so it's certainly a pleasure to join you here this evening. Brother Augusto, I was just kind of perusing your website, and folks, for those of you who aren't familiar, go to theappearance.com. Great website. It's loaded with, it's a website with great depth, and you'll find a lot of good stuff there. But Brother Perez, I want to read to you something that you wrote, and I have no idea when you wrote it, but I think it really ties into the question that you just posed to Joe and our listeners and viewers at large. You wrote, "We are moving out of one dispensation and into another, just like when Jesus came the first time. We are in a transitional period of change right now, and we are looking through a glass darkly. The church age is coming to a close." Allow me to repeat that. "The church age is coming to a close as we are entering the dispensation of the kingdom age, where Jesus Christ will return to his to establish his millennial kingdom on earth. Just like when the religious people resisted the coming of the age of grace when he came the first time, likewise today, many who do not understand the times and the seasons we are in are resisting the changes associated with the coming of the kingdom age." Brother Perez, doesn't our 45th president, Donald Trump, really stand as the figurehead as we move into this transition?
Well, I would put it this way, John. You know, as certain things that he wants to do, okay? Now, we know that Christians were not going to be able to achieve what he wanted to bring about in this country. This is why he reached down and he picked this man, okay, who is a brawler. He's a fighter. He's not intimidated by anybody. He is, if you will, he is a modern day one of the pharaohs, okay? He's a King Cyrus. He's one of the, from the heathen, from the group of the heathen, from the group of people out there that no Christian, no believer, okay, would have chosen. But isn't the Bible filled with cases like that, of God reaching down and picking somebody up from the, you know, from the mud, someone that no one else would use, no one else would, use for any purposes? This is what the Bible is filled with. I mean, we could go from David, we could go from on and on and on and on. The Bible is filled with men and women, but mostly men that basically were imperfect men. Okay, I'm not saying that President Trump is like David. That's not the point. The point is, God chose to use this man. Okay, he chose it. He can do whatever he wants. And the reason that he raised this man up was not to make Christians feel good about themselves. You know, this man is doing things that not even presidents that call themselves Christians, okay, even attempted to do. This man is bringing down Babylon. This man is going after pedophile ring after pedophile rings. He's calling a spade a spade. He's calling the networks corrupt. I have never seen any man in politics do that before. I mean, they have had squabbles, they have had disagreements with presidents, but I don't recall any president ever having the boldness to tell them to their face what they really are. A bunch of liars and a bunch of fake news.
Quick question for you, Brother Perez. Quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to take you off track, but this was just so profound when I saw it this morning. Did you by chance see the picture of Lady Gaga, who I personally believe may be one of the most demonized performers in pop culture?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that picture, brother, of Lady Gaga standing behind President mm-hmm. Carter through Obama? Did you see that picture?
I did. I did see it, honey. I thought it was very symbolic.
Oh, it was so symbolic, and it was so creepy. I wonder if... I don't want to take you too far off track, because you're really on a roll, but would you care to comment on that? Because you have all of the last, 32 years of globalist rule over this country, but you'll notice the president missing from that picture, and Lady Gaga's in white, and she's standing behind them, kind of presiding over them. My goodness, I thought it was frighteningly biblical.
Well, Lady Gaga, along with Madonna and Beyonce, all these are the queens of the occult. They have performed at the halftime and football game. I mean, this is what they do. They know they are part of this thing. And she was standing right behind Papa Bush, or I should say Poppy Bush, and his son, the other Bush. And to the other side was Obama. And then, Clinton on the end, and then Carter on the other end. I mean, what a perfect Photoshop picture. I mean, a perfect picture. Perfect picture of, you know, what it represents. And that is the Babylon system right there. That is Babylon. And Babylon is going to fall. And this is what I want to bring to the people. And what you mentioned before, John, I'll hit on that a bit. And that is the dispensation, the transition that we are entering. Okay, we are in the transition right now of dispensation, and we have heard that this happened or started happening in 2012, and we have heard that it was happening also this year with this the symbolic star sign that took place on September 23rd. And all of these things, and people were predicting the end of the world and this and that, but it was never about the end of the world. It never was. These are prophetic, symbols, prophetic markers in the timeline. And God, basically, the Almighty saying to us, pay attention what time you're in right now. And America, the United States, the Babylon system had to be brought down. It has to be brought down. This is not just about America. There's a lot of preachers out there, and I respect everybody's opinion, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But this is not about, quote-unquote, America. This is about Babylon. And America has, yes, America has represented Babylon a lot, but so has Europe. So has Canada, Australia, and on and on and on and on and on. Many, many, many countries represent Babylon. And China, I mean, who is probably got the stronger currency or is aspiring to get the strongest currency? So China is involved, Russia is involved, all of these countries are involved. Israel is involved. So Babylon, this is about Babylon, bringing down Babylon. And in order to bring down Babylon, all of these things had to be exposed. Okay, the NFL is being exposed to what it really is. A bunch of spoiled brats that don't even know what they're doing. Like this guy Kaepernick now wearing a T-shirt of Fidel Castro. I mean, these people don't know what they're doing. Don't these people realize who Castro is? He's a communist dictator.
I think they know, but we see what has happened, Augusto, is we have with Colin Kaepernick, who no longer has a job as an NFL quarterback due to his protesting of the national anthem and many other things. You see people wearing the Che Guevara shirts, the Fidel Castro shirts. You know, people used to celebrate Manuel Noriega, Pablo Escobar, and it seems that we have seen the left, you know, embrace these types of people, even to the point where, you know, a former terrorist from Puerto Rico was invited to a pride parade in New York and was celebrated by other famous actors and whatnot. And this whole society we have seems to demonize the good. It'll, you know, throw the Bible out of schools, throw the Bible and Christianity out of the courthouse and out of politics. But at the same time, it embraces, the public schools embrace, you know, the Satanism and the Baphomet statues. And these, you know, trendy things to do now in left-wing politics is, you know, embrace terrorists and these people who have done nothing but, you know, brought death and destruction to society. And I think it speaks to where we are in this country when you see, you know, abortion as being praised, when you see turning children into LGBT kind of people being praised. This is what's being celebrated in our communities, and it is so morally bankrupt. It seems like we, you know, this would be the end of days, what Sodom and Gomorrah looked like. Augusto, we are up against the break. We're going to be back in just a few minutes after this network break. Go to Augusto's website, theappearance.com, and he is the author of several books. He's got a great ministry. And bookmark his website, check it out, search it out. There's a lot of excellent info there. He'll be with us through the next hour, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to this Monday edition of the Hagman Report. Our guest is Augusto Perez. Stay tuned.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. Precious Timber Profits.